This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to do a certain area of estate planning. We're going to be talking about prevention of elder abuse, which I have not done before on this level. And some time ago, not that long ago, one of my guests, Linda Kramer, was on the program, and she suggested to me after we finished the program that she would like to do a program on prevention of elder abuse, and that's what we're doing. And her daughter is here, and I'll let you know a little bit more about them. They are specialists in estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, Linda Kramer and Deborah Kramer-Raden. And they have their law office in Los Altos. And we're going to be talking a lot about this, so you might want to take a few notes in case you may be confronted or some neighbor of yours or someone close to you you feel may be the victim of elder abuse, you or your neighbor or someone close to you. So you might want to be ready to take down some numbers. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, which certifies 11 fields of law. Estate planning, trust and probate law, appellate law, bankruptcy law, criminal law, family law, franchise and distribution law, immigration and nationality law, taxation law, workers' compensation law, legal malpractice law, and admiralty and maritime law. Additional funding is provided by the family law section of the State Bar, the trust and estate section of the State Bar, and the lawyer referral service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Linda, welcome back.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you here. And Deborah, thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Very much. Thanks. Very nice to have both of you here. Linda, why is it that when we got finished with our program approximately a year or so ago that you said to me, Chuck, I'd like to come back and do a program on prevention of elder abuse? What was your concern and why did you want to do it?
Well, my motivation was that this is an area that I see not frequently, but often in my own practice, and that I actually experienced as a public health nurse when I worked as a public health nurse 30-odd years ago. And it's an area that I think is ignored or basically ignored by most of the community because most people think, gee, you know, we're taught to respect our elders. We're taught to respect our parents and to honor our parents and our grandparents. But in actuality, there are a lot of people who don't. Mm-hmm. And in actuality, many, many abusers, elder abusers, are actually family members. And I think this is something that's swept under the rug. People don't want to admit it. They ignore it. And when something like this is ignored, then it festers. And again, it's my experience that this is something that happens, and people their heads are in the sand, and they just simply don't know how to recognize it. And I feel it's important for me to make people aware.
We're not only talking tonight about physical abuse, but financial abuse, are we not?
Exactly.
And how old does someone have to be considered? Mm-hmm. In the category of someone who's suffering from elder abuse, is there a certain thumbnail approach to this or not?
Right. Well, legally, an elder is someone who's 65 or older. Mm-hmm. So, if you are 60 or 65, or if you know someone who's 65, this is your problem. This is our problem. This is a problem of the boomers that are coming up,
and a lot of boomers. Yeah, the boomers are coming up. You know, Deborah, you mentioned to me, and I think this is very important that people know this, that being required under law to be a mandatory reporter could even be someone who is, even as a volunteer, driving someone to and from church, driving someone to and from the market, the grocery shopping, et cetera. Would you talk just a little bit about that?
Sure. So under California law, there are certain mandated reporters, bank officials, your broker, somebody who, your clergy member, somebody in the medical community who cares for you. These are mandated reporters. By law, they must report a suspicion of elder abuse within either immediately or within a reasonable period of time. But there are others. So a person who has assumed part-time or full-time care for an elder, even if they're not being compensated for that care, is in that category of a mandatory, mandated reporter.
And what if they don't? What if there is physical or financial abuse and someone who is in the position that you're talking about doesn't report it? What are the consequences for that person, even though that person is not the one who is the abuser?
That's right. So potentially there are civil criminal charges against that person, potentially. It could be as little as a $1,000 fine, but it could be as much as jail time. Really? So it's a serious offense.
All right. What kinds of, I think all of us can understand if someone, whether it's a family member or a caretaker or a neighbor or whatever, is physically abusing someone, and we see bruises on someone, either a black eye or some marks on someone's hands or arms. I mean, there are red flags there.
Sure.
What other kind of abuse? What are the other things that we might look for that would be helpful to us, whether we're a neighbor next door, a neighbor across the street, or a friend or whatever, to be aware that something's wrong going on here?
I think people should look for signs like, is someone unkempt, suddenly unkempt? Do they have, are their clothes clean? Do they have, and this may sound funny, but significant body odor? Are they losing weight? Are they withdrawn, unusually withdrawn, or unusually hyperactive? Are they, are they starting to, are they afraid to go out? Are they suddenly surrounded by maybe one person or several people that, and you're unable to see your neighbor without this other person there every single moment. And then that's a type of elder abuse when the elder, the vulnerable elder, is being isolated. And isolation, by the way, is terrible because all of a sudden the elder is being manipulated to distrust their clergy, distrust their doctors, distrust their lawyers, distrust their own children, or one child manipulates them so that they distrust the other children. So there are lots of signs, just being aware. It's not always marks around the arms or scratches. Or you might look, you know, maybe there are some burns or things like that.
Now, when you say burns, what would that be from?
Well, I had one woman who told me that her son moved into her house with her, with the son's girlfriend and the son's two younger children. And so the elderly woman was suddenly relegated. She had to live in a certain part of the house. And when she came out to the kitchen, she wanted to be with the rest of the family.
Yes.
Her son took a big pot of hot water and poured it over her head. Because she was being obnoxious. You know, she was getting in their way. And so she had burns.
Did she go to the emergency room? Do you have any idea?
She did not.
Oh, my.
And the reason she didn't is because, and that's another sign, because people like her, often they're embarrassed.
Yes.
They don't want to report this. They're embarrassed. They're ashamed. They're afraid that, gee, if I tell people about my son, then he'll leave. I won't be able to see my grandchildren anymore. I won't have anybody to take care of me. I'll be alone. I'll have to go to a nursing home. I'll have no place to go. And so that's, I think, one of the biggest impediments to people reporting, is that they're embarrassed and afraid.
Although in my position as a deputy DA for San Mateo County, I've had very little experience with this. But I have found that, and we'll talk about this more in the program, that older persons sometimes are the victims of these representations about, I can help you with refinancing your home, You've won, by the way, the lottery, etc. So let's talk about that in about half a minute or so while we take a very brief break where we're going to have, locally anyway, our Call a Lawyer. Okay, it's Call a Lawyer night, and we have a number of attorneys here. It's 1-800-525-9917. This is your opportunity where you have a chance to call in, talk with one of many attorneys who are here doing this as volunteers. It's a wonderful service they're doing. No obligation on your part, and here's the number, 1-800-525-9917. For those of you who want to talk to my guests on the air, you might want to jot down this number, 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program. We're focusing on an area that has a lot of potential problems, and this is an area in estate planning, prevention of elder abuse. If you've tuned in the last few minutes, my guests are both certified specialists, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, in estate planning, trust, and probate law, Deborah Kramer-Raden and Linda Kramer. They are both... Linda is Deborah's mother and vice versa. Deborah's the daughter of Linda.
Well put, yes.
And they're partners in their law firm in Los Altos. You know, what occurred in my area, and I do primarily consumer protection, unfair competition, but I remember a number of years ago, and this is quite a few years ago, I got a call from somebody saying that this little elderly lady, I think she was in Hillsborough, lived by herself. She was over 70. She had received a call from, and this is a little bit different type of abuse, but I think it's worth a brief discussion. She had been called by someone on the phone who represented himself as the attorney for the Canadian Lottery. Mm-hmm. He told her that she had won $500,000. Mm-hmm. And he said to her, what you need to do before we send you the check, you need to pay the taxes up front. And she accepted that, and she had two credit cards with enough credit on them that she actually sent by credit cards $100,000 to this address. A few days later, she gets another call from the same fellow, the so-called attorney from the Canadian Lottery, saying, oh, Mrs. So-and-so, we made a mistake. You've won $1 million. So, but you need to pay the additional $100,000 of taxes. So when it came to my office, some friend actually who had been out talking to the actual DA from Marin County said, you better, who told this story to the DA, said, you better call the San Mateo County DA's office and let them know about this. Fortunately, I was able to send out one of our inspectors to this lady's home, and we were able to stop her from trying to refinance her home that was free and clear. She was in the process of doing that. One of the things I learned, though, in this with people who are living by themselves, elderly persons, is they are very afraid to contact adult protective services if there's a problem because they're afraid that the county will take them out of their home. Would you talk about that just a little bit?
Right. That's a real fear.
Yeah.
They are afraid that someone will take them out of their home, put them someplace else, that people won't believe them, you know, because they're old. And so because they're old, people will simply not respect their opinion or their experience. And I think that's one of the major causes of elder abuse is the abusers can get away with this because the elder is afraid. As I said, embarrassed. They don't want to report this.
Well, certainly if it's a family member, they don't want to.
Often.
If it's a close friend.
Mm-hmm.
I know in my office many of the cases that the very experienced Deputy DA Melissa McCowan in my office handled prosecuting these elder abuse cases involved a good percentage of them were family members.
90% of the abusers are family members.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they're often spouses or partners.
Yeah.
And most often they're children and grandchildren.
But Chuck, can I just go back
please.
To your point?
One if
more
you would.
Sure. About being afraid that this woman was afraid that she would be taken out of her home.
Yeah.
It doesn't always happen this way, but I think our adult protective services, mm-hmm. our court system really prefers people stay in their home also. That mm-hmm. generally is the safest place for them. Mm-hmm. But I go back to people need to look around and see who are the people they trust, and if they can get a plan in place that can provide safety for them, that they can maybe perhaps this woman could hire a trusted caregiver
yes.
to check in every once in a while or to be there a few hours a day. Or
when you say a trusted caregiver, is that a special term or what?
Well, potentially it could be a family member, but it would be a caregiver that is employed with a proper employment agency or a caregiving service.
All right.
So there's their background checks, there's a checks and balance system there.
You know, before we went on the air, you mentioned something to me, and I know it's of limited, it covers a limited area, but I think the whole idea is very important for people to hear about, and it may be that they can in their own area, because this portion of your legal rights is the statewide version of the program, which we distribute throughout California. But you mentioned to me in Palo Alto, California, there is an organization, I guess it's a nonprofit, called Avenidas Village.
Correct.
Would you talk about this just a little bit?
Sure.
What do they do?
So the village movement is nationwide, but in Palo Alto, there's a nonprofit, you're right, called Avenidas. And Avenidas Village, you just have to be over 50, and Avenidas Village groups communities together. And it's a way to be a resource for your neighbors. It's a way Avenidas Village members can take advantage of vetted providers such as house painters or handyman or an attorney, people who've already been checked out and very thoroughly checked to make sure that they're safe and they're offering reasonably cost services.
Can you tell us, generally speaking, is there a way in that this program is distributed statewide. Mm-hmm. Is there a way that someone who is interested in the village approach that you're talking about can find out how to find that in their own area? Is there a particular way they might do this? I mean, this is a nonprofit, not part of a county or a city type of thing.
There must be a way. I could give you the local number, the Palo Alto number.
I think that's a good idea, because I would think that the Palo Alto Avenidas Village would be able to refer people to other villages throughout the state.
Sure.
But give us that number right now.
Sure.
Would you?
So it's in Palo Alto, 650-289-5400.
Okay, 650-289-5400.
Right.
So if you're in another part of the state and you are trying to find out about a village in your own area that could be very helpful to you in certainly trying to find checked out people, whether it's roofers or plumbers or whatever, attorneys or whatever it is, this is a great way to do that. You know, Deborah, you had mentioned that what one should do is try to develop a team approach. Right. What is the team approach?
So I also find that if there are people that you trust in your life, so if you trust your banker and you see, you go visit, you walk into your bank once a week, or your accountant or your attorney or doctor or your son, if these people know about each other, it's that much easier for each of them to check in if one has a concern. So I have very, very regularly, we are able to help clients. A banker will call and say, you know, Deborah, this client, she's been making regular deposits every year or every week, and all of a sudden she's starting to write checks to this person, and these checks are getting more and more regular and getting bigger. Do you know who this person is? And I'm able to look at the estate plan and say, over the years, this person is brand new in this woman's life, and maybe there is something to check out.
What do you do in a situation like that? Let's say that this woman, the elderly person, is your client.
Right.
And you suspect that whoever this is, who could be a caretaker, could be a family member, is really looting, I call it, looting your client's estate. How do you deal with that?
So it's a good point. So we talked earlier about mandated reporters.
Yeah.
One of the exceptions, the attorney has an attorney-client privilege.
Yes.
And actually, unless gets permission from her client, is not allowed to report this if there's a suspicion of abuse.
Really?
Right. We need
that's very unfortunate.
Yes.
I didn't realize that.
Yes. So my first response is to check in with my client.
Yes.
And talk to her and get a sense, see if I can figure out what's going on. And if we have to dig a little deeper, we can at that point.
If she gives you permission to report, where would you report? To what? The local police department?
To the local adult protective services.
Adult protective services of the county.
Correct.
All right. Let's do this. Let us just take a moment break. All right. It's Call a Lawyer Night. Where are the attorneys busy? I don't see them doing anything. Oh, I want all of you to start calling in. 1-800-525-9917. These attorneys are waiting to talk to you. They've had their pizza, so they're strong. And they're ready for you. And we have all kinds of areas that you might be interested in, whether it's landlord-tenant, whether it's estate planning, whether it's employment law, just a whole bunch of different things that are available. So what I suggest is, please, if you have any issues, give them a call, 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. By the way, in a few minutes, you'll be able to call in and speak to Mike. Guests here, the number is 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney, and we're doing a program on prevention of elder abuse. We're trying to talk about, get into this first half hour, which is the statewide version of the program, a number of significant issues that may be helpful to you if you are someone who is facing this, or if you're aware of someone who is facing elder abuse, whether it's physical or whether it's financial. What I want to mention to you is that if you are facing a problem like this, or if you suspect that someone who you're concerned about is facing a problem like this, you can always call Adult Protective Services in your county. My experience has been in my county, where I'm a deputy DA, San Mateo County, they're right on top of it. And to help someone, not to try to yank them out of their home, but to try to help them if there's a real problem. So that's the county's Adult Protective Services, which is what is called, this is what it's called throughout the state. What about powers of attorney? What do you think about that?
So another preventative measure is to have your plan in place. So a financial power of attorney is the document in which you appoint an agent. You appoint somebody to act in your shoes, and what you're telling them is, here are the powers that I give you. Here are the things that you can do for me. It could be an immediate power, or it could be a power that only works if the principal, is incapacitated. So the benefit of that document is that you've already appointed somebody that you trust to help you pay your bills, to make sure that if you need a caregiver in your home, that somebody has the right to hire a caregiver on your behalf. So that's a wonderful tool to use if you trust the person. The flip side is, if you ever get to a point where you don't trust the person you've appointed, you need to be proactive about it and make a change.
A lot of people, though, are very reluctant, are they not? They're embarrassed by this. They're concerned. How do you, Linda, with your background, having been for many years a registered nurse in the public area, how do you try to help someone get over this embarrassment, this problem where, gee, I don't want to complain about my own son or my own daughter or whatever. What do you do? Right. What suggestion do you have?
Well, I'm going to flip it a little bit.
Please.
And I'm going to say my comment is that I feel this is a community responsibility. And I think, yes, it's up to the community to look for someone who might be susceptible, somebody who is definitely or possibly being abused. And I think there are certain groups within our community that really lend themselves. And I really believe that the faith community, whether it's somebody's church or synagogue or mosque, they're really positioned in such a way that they can help these people. So if you see Emily, who normally comes to church every Sunday and suddenly doesn't, I think that the community itself has to reach out and start looking for this person, help them to get over the hurdle of embarrassment. That's not embarrassing. That it's a problem. It's not the elder's fault that he or she is being abused, taken advantage of, or neglected. It is the abuser's fault. And the insidious thing about elder abuse is it's not specific. Seeing a burn or seeing a bruise on someone is specific, but neglect is a huge part of elder abuse. And I had one son who spent every single weekend going grocery shopping with his mother. And he would spend hours in the grocery store with her because she was an elderly woman who was very slow walking around the grocery store. And he would bring her back home with her bags of groceries and then just leave her and at the door. And I said, well, did you help her to unload the groceries? He said, well, no, she did that. And then I said, well, how do you think she got the things into the house? And he said, well, I guess she kicked them down the stairs or something.
Really?
Yes.
Would kick them down the
and
stairs.
And so hey, that's
well, that's
is
a melon.
Truly,
you know, if you got a melon, you want to kick it.
Or the cans or the big rolls of toilet paper or whatever.
I love throwing those cans.
but that's not abuse necessarily, but it's neglect.
It's
not looking inside the house. What did she do with these things when she got into the house? How did she manage to take care of things? And the other thing is that there's a lot of stress. He truly felt he was helping his mother.
To a certain degree, he was.
But then
he dropped her.
And there's a lot of stress being a caregiver.
Yes.
The daughter who has to work and has a mother at home who is needy, who needs help eating, but daughter has to go to work. Daughter must take care of her own young children. So it's very stressful to be kind of flip it a little bit to be that caregiver. And so there are places where caregivers in the community can find help themselves in order to help a vulnerable
elderly person. Which sometimes requires some kind of psychological help for the caregiver.
Sometimes.
Would you say sometimes?
Or there are places, like Deborah's mentioned, Avenida's Village, or there are caregiving services where an elderly person can go, and it's daycare, literally daycare.
You need helpful. Certainly both parties in such a situation need help.
Right.
All right. It's right now, just about 7:29 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KALW in San Francisco. This is your Legal Rights. And this is our Call a Lawyer night. We did not have one last month in December because it was Christmas time, and I figured if we did it the fourth Wednesday of the month, no one would show up, and probably no one would be listening. In any event, tonight we're starting the new year with our first Call a Lawyer event. And by the way, I want to let you all know, next month is the 29th year I have been doing this program. 26 years at KALW, and I'm very proud of that. And I have the support of the State Bar of California, the San Francisco Bar, the San Mateo County Bar, the California, let me tell you, because I'm very proud of the organizations that are behind this program, and they are the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar, as I said, the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. So I'm very proud to have them supporting this program, which provides this, what I think is wonderful information for you. I happen to be a great lover of public radio, especially this station's public radio. And so let me tell you who's here for Call a Lawyer, and then we'll take your calls. The number, if you want to call in here and talk with my guests on the air is 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. If you have questions in the area of, let's say, estate planning, and it doesn't have to be on elder abuse, but you'll have a chance to do that. But let me tell you also, off the air on the 800 number, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917, you can talk to one of many attorneys who are here. Former workers' compensation administrative law judge Rich Kirby for workers' comp. Jeff Hayden, a certified criminal law specialist from Redwood City. Certified specialist in family law, Janet Frankel. Jason Wolford, landlord-tenant law. This is Jason's first time in joining us. For employment, disability, education, business, construction, Peter Sturges, who was my guest a couple of weeks ago on disability and education law. Trusts and estate law, Gaddy Zohar. Tax law, real estate, Frank Adam, who's been doing this for now a number of years, as has Jeff Hayden. And patent and, oh, there he is, he's standing up so I see him, Ron Rohde, who's here for patent law, aviation law, lemon law, and BBB arbitration. And if you're being hounded by creditors, Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy, will be available to you tomorrow off the air, obviously, Thursday, January 24th from 8 to 11 a.m. You can call him. And if he's, you get his voicemail, leave your name and phone number, and he'll call you back. It's 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111 for Leon Baer. Let me do this. If you don't mind, for those of you who are waiting to talk to my guest, there's a hypothetical that was brought into the studio here, and it's worth it, and then there's another one that I want to cover also. A wealthy heiress dies. Her will leaves everything to her attorneys and her personal maid. Now, I see some red flags right there. Her children are cut out of the will. Does this situation raise red flags of possible elder abuse or undue influence? Can the will be challenged by the children? Do you have some comments about this? I'll tell you, I think it could even be so far as being criminal, but that's my where I'm coming from. But what comments do you have, okay, Linda?
Well, first of all,
and by the way, let me tell you all who's here in case you've tuned in just a few minutes ago. Specialists in estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization, Linda Kramer and Deborah Kramer Radin. Go ahead, Linda.
All right. So the first thing, and I just had to laugh out loud. It's a classic kind of a law school question, but the attorney who wrote this woman's estate plan, they're disqualified people. The caregiver is also a disqualified person. So right off the bat, there are three red flags.
I mean, legally, they're disqualified.
Legally, they're disqualified from being an heir.
Yeah.
From being an heir.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so that was the first thing. I mean, they wrote this, they get nothing.
Yeah. And frankly, from the attorney's standpoint, if an attorney did this, frankly, I can see the state bar moving to disbar him.
Absolutely.
Or her, whoever
it is. It's unconscionable.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It is unconscionable. Mm-hmm. And the maid situation, if this is the case, I can see as some kind of really improper thing. So
right.
So the children could challenge this, could they not?
The children can challenge it.
Right.
The children should challenge it.
All right.
Now,
yeah.
There are certain exceptions.
Yeah.
But there are always exceptions to lawyers' rules.
When you say exceptions, give us a couple.
For example, if the lawyer was a relative, it doesn't sound like it is. But
I see. Okay.
Another example, if an independent lawyer said this was all on the up and up, this was fine, this is what this woman wanted to do, there was no undue influence. So it's not a slam dunk.
Okay. So it's the issue of undue influence,
which
is the big issue here. All right. Let me also mention something to you, since the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association is one of the funders of this program. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and for a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KALW listeners like you. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. Call during normal business hours, 650-369-4149. 650-369-4149. If you're in any other part of California, every county has a bar association and lawyer referral service. Call your own during normal business hours. They'll do their best to find someone who's experienced, set you up for a half an hour consultation. And depending on the county, it could be for half an hour, a low of $25, maybe a high of $35. And before the end of the program, I want to tell you how you can find your certified specialist in your area. But let's do this, if both of you are ready. Let's start with Robert. Welcome to Your Legal Rights. Robert, are you still there? Did we lose Robert? All right. If we lost Robert, let's try Alex. Alex, are you there?
Yes, I am, Chuck.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Congratulations to you also.
Well, thank you.
Let me just ask your guests if... My mother lives out of state and out in the boondocks. And when you mentioned about maybe undue influence, my mother is not by any means, I don't think, you know, senile or unable to take care of herself. But she has a friend that she's had for many years. And I'm not really sure if, you know, if it's undue influence or not. But one day she let out that to me that the will has been written up, and that we're probably not going to like it, and that nothing we can do about it, because if we dare contest it, we get nothing. And you know, who did she
tell you then, Alex, that she's leaving most of her assets to?
Now that she didn't say.
She did not. Okay, she warned you that if you try to contest this, I have a provision in my will, and you get nothing.
Right, and the thing is that, you know, she owns a lot. I mean, mm-hmm. she has, you know, quite a bit of property and a couple of houses. Mm-hmm. I'm not a dollar. I mean, I don't really care. It's just the idea that the way she's acting, it just sounds to me like maybe not into, maybe, you know, because we're all weird. I think she's a little bit, you know, a little bit kooky.
Yeah.
But I'm just not sure. When your guest had mentioned that part, that aspect of it, you know, what is there to do on any of that? Or is there anything to do on any of that?
Are you aware, Alex, if your mom has an attorney?
I'm sure she does, because the money that she has, she was widowed, you know, 40 years ago or so.
Oh,
and so then she got quite a bit of money for that, and for being her father was a pioneer. In the
and when is the last time you saw your mom face-to-face?
About 2 years ago.
Uh-huh. And do you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, I have two sisters, and one lives in the same state, you know, like a couple of hours away, but she's kept at arm length also.
She is. So in other words, is it fair to say that your mom has told you that she's not leaving much of any of her assets to you or your sisters? Is that essentially what she told you?
Basically, she didn't quantify it, mm-hmm. but I have to assume so.
Okay. Well, let me get some comments for you. If you'll turn your radio back up, maybe my guests have some thoughts that you might follow through on.
Thank you, Chuck.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Let me mention this, which is the requirement of the state bar. My guests cannot give specific legal advice. I'm sure you all know that, but I want to say that. And what generally my guests do is try to talk about something in a more general way to give those of you who may have a question that you pose on the program some direction of where to go next. Linda, what thoughts mm-hmm. do you have for Alex, which seems to be very strange, unless, of course, Alex has shown no interest in his mother for years, and all of a sudden now that she's getting really old, he's now saying, well, gee, I'd like to get some money here or some assets.
Right. And so my first suggestion would be, why don't you visit Mom?
Yeah.
Why don't you spend some time with her and let her know that you care about her, that might, I don't know if it would change her estate plan, but it would certainly maybe enrich your life mm-hmm. a little more, and probably yeah. hers.
I would even suggest, unless he's estranged, unless Alex, you're estranged from your sisters, is to try to arrange to have you and your sisters get together with your mom.
right?
She's probably lonely. Or maybe she's got some, boyfriend who's 20, 30 years younger, and he's really, doing the job there.
Right.
That's what would concern me.
Well, it doesn't have to be a boyfriend. It could just be, a very good friend is somebody who suddenly shows up in this woman's life, because you're absolutely right. She's probably lonely.
She's not seen her kids for years.
Yeah. She does not have to leave everything to you.
No, of course not. There's no law that requires her to do that. But it's strange. It's strange.
It's unusual, and it does bring, raise a red flag.
Yeah.
And maybe this is something that has always been in her plan, and because she's been feeling neglected, she's mentioning it now.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the only other comment I have is that because Mom is in a different state, laws are different. I don't know what elder abuse laws are in that particular state. Mm-hmm. So it might be worth exploring.
Right.
Mom
might be competent and still be subject to undue influence manipulation.
It could even be if she has a caretaker. Mm-hmm. The caretaker has now become the person who's her best friend.
The gardener.
The gardener. The gardener is her best friend.
Yes.
Boy, does he do good gardening.
He does.
Wow, it's incredible.
He does all kinds of things around the house.
Yeah,
And visiting would give the family a sense of, is it isolation, or is mom just really close to this person?
Right. Yeah. And if Mom maybe is getting a little kooky, that's good to know, too, so that you could take steps, and maybe it is time to call Adult Protective Services if you're really, truly concerned
in
about
that
her.
State.
Correct.
And also, Alex, if you feel your mom is really the victim of undue influence, it may be that you would want to contact an attorney in that state also and explore with that attorney what could he or she do to try to stop this undue influence. That's certainly what I would do anyway. Let me give you the phone number again for Call a Lawyer. I see one lawyer standing. We should not have any lawyers standing. They should be there sitting with the phone to their ear speaking. So it's 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. And please, again, if you're being overly annoyed by, pardon me, by creditors, tomorrow Leon Bayer, a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available to talk with you, no obligation whatsoever, from 8 to 11 a.m. if you will call him at 1-800-477-3111, 1-800-477-3111. If you call and get his voicemail, leave your name and phone number, he'll call you back. He's been incredibly generous with his time in doing Call a Lawyer, and also been a guest on this program now at least 3 or 4 times. And I think you'll find he will be very helpful to you. The general number for Call a Lawyer is 1-800-525-9917. And if you want to talk to my guests on the air, it's 1-415-841-4134. Before we take another call, let me just mention, someone sent me an email yesterday, and I have communicated with this person, basically, and maybe, obviously, we can't solve the problem, but it involves a trustee of a trust. And let me briefly do this, and maybe we'll have a few comments for this person. Apparently, the basic thing is the trustee of the trust has gone AWOL. This particular person, who is the executor, as I understand it, of her mother's estate, cannot find this person. Communication has been absolutely nil in the last 2 years. And here's what she says. My mother died last summer, and as executor, among many other tasks, it fell to me to sort out a trust of which my mother was beneficiary. The trust was set up by the will of her mother, my grandmother, in 1995. I discovered that the trustee of the trust had not been making the required disbursements to my mother, nor had she furnished the tax forms requested by my mother and her accountant for tax returns in the last 2 years, nor had she prepared required annual accounting of funds. In addition, the trustee had refused to reply to any of my mother's or my letters, nor had she responded to the many phone messages day and evening I left on her voicemail. And so this particular person, this executor of the will and I presumably a beneficiary of the trust, wonders, what in the world can I do? Mm-hmm. What thoughts, Linda, do you have?
Well, the trustee is certainly non-responsive. It sounds like this woman has trustee's phone numbers, last known address, and she's not responding to the daughter. I think she needs to contact an attorney, and I think she needs to get some legal assistance to have this trustee discharged, or at least show up in court to have an explanation, because accountings are due. And why weren't these monies being distributed? And what did this trustee do with the money over the last several years? And as executor of her mother's estate, she does have the responsibility to do that. But I do think she needs some legal assistance to do it.
Now, in this, she's mentioning that the attorney who had the law firm that had originally appointed the trustee has been of no help to her whatsoever. So you want to go to a different law firm, presumably.
Because the attorney that this woman was trying to contact probably represented the trustee. Mm-hmm. And so the attorney, because of the attorney-client privilege between the attorney and the trustee, is not allowed to disclose any information about that trustee.
Yes.
So ethically and legally, the attorney can't. It's not that he wouldn't or she wouldn't. They just can't.
Any other comments you might have, Deborah?
That if, I think in this email, there was a question about getting the money back.
Yes.
Right? So if there is still money there, yes. So, but I think it's very important to act expeditiously, quickly. If there is money, maybe those bank accounts can be frozen. Mm-hmm. If there's real estate, there's a way to stop a sale, perhaps, before more is bled out of this estate.
So our thoughts here for you is to certainly contact an attorney, preferably someone who is experienced in estate planning, trusts, etc., who can obviously attempt to do something to help you unravel what appears to be a mess. It may be, this may be an embezzlement case, which may eventually get to be a criminal matter, but you don't know that at this point. I would be, personally, coming from my standpoint as a deputy DA, very concerned that there may have been an embezzlement here by the trustee. In any event, let's see. We've got Mike. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you very much for taking a call, and you guys give some excellent advice. What my question is there's some real artists out there that get a hold of you, like on these internet sales where you want to be productive and still do some work, and you get a offer to sell stuff on the internet and stuff. And these guys are real good. They know how to push all the buttons and know where your ethics are, and they can bring you right in. And then all of a sudden you're out $4,000 or $5,000 on an investment into a business. And it's an LLC that's usually in Nevada. Mm-hmm. And I've had a couple of my friends taken like that, including myself. And is there any advice you can give on older people on, just trying to get by this trust? And they're really good at it. I mean, they get your attention and your confidence.
They're good talkers.
Yeah.
That's one of the things they're very good at. One thing that I would suggest, Mike, in something like this is, depending on where this outfit is, and as you say, it may be in Nevada, I would certainly, number one, just very basically what you can do yourself, I would want to contact the Better Business Bureau in that area where this place is located to see if there are any complaints that have come in. My experience, I deal very closely with the Better Business Bureau in the Golden Gate area, which covers San Francisco and most of the counties in the Bay Area. And they're extremely good in monitoring what's going on and letting me know what's going on if there is a business in my county that may have been ripping off people. That's how I would, you as a consumer can do that to begin with. What comments do either of you have? Deborah.
Yeah. Well, just to start, as Mike said, this can happen to anybody, and we all are taught to be polite, and we're taught to read information. But it can. I had a client, a former Stanford professor. He's an engineer, and he was sold this used car that turned out to be a lemon, and he kicked him. He just couldn't believe that he was taken for this because he was so smart, and it can happen to any of us.
It can. You know? It certainly can.
It's okay to hang up on people.
Yeah.
It's okay to be rude to the telemarketer who calls. Yeah. It's not being rude. It's hanging up.
Right. And the other thing is that if it sounds too, basic, if it sounds too good to be true, it really is too good to be true. Yeah. And there's no reason why you shouldn't stop and say, what's your phone number? Mm-hmm. Let me call you back.
Yeah.
Send me some paperwork. You don't have to make a decision on the phone. Certainly don't give these scam artists your
they've done
credit card
all that,
number.
At least in my experience, they've, you know, we've gone, you know, several calls and they send you, you know, the website and so forth to go to. And then, but what happens is, at least through my experience, is you just get bogged down in these details and it gets more and more confusing as you go on. And it, you know, I mean, it really seems legitimate. It's not something that's too good to be true because you got to put work into it and they let you know that. But, you know, it just keeps, they say they're going to call you back after a while after they've been paid, and they don't. You call them, and they're there, but then they just sort of shove you off into the corner. So it's kind of, you know, it's one of these things that gets strung out over a period of 6 months or so, and I think a lot of people just lose heart, you know, and feel kind of a failure after a while that it's their fault that they got sucked into this thing, and so they never do anything about
Mike,
it.
Let me tell you what I'm in the consumer protection unit for the San Mateo DA's office, and if someone were to complain to me about what you are talking about, I would want to look into this, frankly, on the basis that this may be a scam and may be something that could have criminal aspects to it. It may be unfair competition under the Business and Professions Code, misrepresentations, etc., where I would bring possibly a civil action against this outfit and the individual. So my thought to you is, one of the things, what county are you in?
Alameda.
Okay. One thing that I would do is I would contact the Alameda County DA's office, Consumer Protection Unit, get a complaint form from them, fill it out, send it in to them, and see what they have to say. You know where this outfit is coming from? Is it Las Vegas?
No. No. What the heck was it? It was near Las Vegas, one of those little towns.
So it's in Nevada somewhere.
Yeah, right.
I would, if I were you, I would also want to contact the, frankly, the comparable district attorney's office in that area, in that county where that business is located, and find out how you can file a complaint with him. I think you need to do that. We're going to take some other calls, but good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Don't hesitate to do that. Consumer protection units of DA's offices can be very effective and very helpful. And you've gotten into this too far at this point. It's a shame that you were not able to prevent this, but you were not. But you do have things available to you, including the Attorney General's office, the District Attorney's office locally. The District Attorney's or comparable prosecutor's office in that county in Nevada. And I bet you will find out that there are other complaints against this outfit. And it may be that particular prosecutor's office is in the process of investigating and going to do something about it. We have a few more minutes for Call a Lawyer, 1-800-525-9917. Let me thank these people. Leon Bayer tomorrow will be available to you from 8 to 11, 1-800-477-3111. I want to thank Ron Rohde for coming in, Frank Adam, Kara Weissman. Kara's here for Immigration and Small Claims Court, Gaddy Zohar, Peter Sturges, Jason Wolford, Janet Frankel, Jeff Hayden, and former Workers' Compensation Administrative Law Judge Rich Kirby. Thank you very much for joining us. And the number again for Call a Lawyer for our next few minutes, 1-800-525-9917. So let me see. Who do we have? We have Catherine. You've been so patient. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you so much. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I understand that you have just a few minutes left, and really I just wanted to share, I believe it was your guest, Deborah, who used the term a trusted caregiver,
yeah.
And I wanted to share a success story. It's a success story to a degree, but I was actually a caretaker for an elderly woman. She was about 7 years old, and she had suffered a stroke and had short-term memory issues as a result. So unfortunately, her daughter took advantage of this and coerced her into signing papers to take out a $100,000 home equity line of credit. The daughter then, of course, set up a really complex sort of web of bank accounts connected to her mom's Social Security check and pension check, and then sort of funneled money through these various accounts and ultimately into, you know, the daughter's account. And I noticed this because I would open this woman's mail. We would open the mail together, and I would look at anything that was important, or I'd sort of stack up her bills for her, kind of line them up and organize them. And I noticed that on the statement that all of a sudden this balance kept growing, and yet nothing at the house was being improved. There mm-hmm. were no capital improvements whatsoever. So I ultimately reached out to a family member that I thought that I could trust, and it was very difficult because I didn't know who in the family was sort of in on this, but I knew this was not, you know, correct. And I found a trusted family member and let them know, and then, of course, immediately called, you know, Adult Protective Services. I have a background in Alameda County's Adult and Aging Services, so I knew that I had to report this and that it was a very serious thing.
And let me, unfortunately, Catherine, we're just about out of time. Did
sure.
Adult Protective Services help to unravel this whirlwind problem?
They did. And good. Ultimately, unfortunately, the woman decided not to prosecute because it was her own daughter. Mm. But what did happen was that another family member came in and established financial power of attorney to prevent something like that from happening again. So it was a success.
Thank goodness. That's a great story. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for calling.
Nice way to end the show.
I'm sorry?
Nice way to end the program.
Yeah. Yes, it is a great way to end the program. I want to thank you both very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you.
Return, Linda, and having you, Deborah, and I hope to have you back.
A pleasure. Thank you.
My guests are both certified specialists in estate planning, trust, and probate law, Linda Kramer and Deborah Kramer-Radin. Their law office is in Los Altos. Let me tell you what we're doing next week. We're going to be in family law. If you're going through a divorce, I hope you're not, but if you want to try to make it a little easier than having to go to trial and all of the awful stuff that can be involved with that, we're going to talk about alternative dispute resolution, mediation in family law cases. My guests will be family law attorneys Esther Rosenfeld, Jill Mondry, and Lauren Zorfus. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Additional funding is provided by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. I thank you very much for joining us, and I hope you join us next week. This is Chuck Finney.